Welcome to Camping Out, a podcast about interesting people, stories, adventures, and their impact in the world, usually through the lens of outdoor adventure. I'm Dan Camp, and this evening we get to hear from Anna Lee Decker. Anna Lee is a charismatic soul with a deep love for the river and the community built around it. Growing up within a stone's throw of the United States National Whitewater Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, Anna Lee developed the goal to one day become a professional river guide. After achieving this goal at the USNWC, she's gone on to become a contributing rider for the International Rafting Federation, which is recognized as the legitimate world governing body for rafting. As a film student, artist, writer, and professional raft guide, there isn't much that this whitewater woman cannot do. So pull up a chair, pour yourself your preferred fireside beverage, and get ready for Anna Lee Decker. Welcome to Camping Out. I'm Dan Camp, and tonight I get the opportunity to have a fireside chat with a wild whitewater woman and contributing rider for the International Rafting Federation, Anna Lee Decker. From the moment she sat in the back of a raft, Anna Lee felt the connection that all rubber pushers end up getting hooked on. The thrill of reading water, the adrenaline of fast-paced critical thought, and the unbelievable human connection that is found when you mix humans and moving water. It's this love that's allowed her to reflect on her time as a badass chick guide to bring her skill and creative side to help the next generation of raft guides. Anna Lee Decker, welcome to Camping Out.
Thank you. Whoa, I sound so cool when you say it like that. Dang.
Those intros write themselves, man. I'm telling you, you start looking up a person and then checking out their social medias. And it's really cool when we have the opportunity to actually start our conversation, because I kind of feel like I've built this person up and my expectations are typically blown away as a conversation goes on. So I'm really happy to have you.
I'm so excited to be here. This is going to be fun.
So first things first, I ask this at the beginning of every podcast, what is your preferred fireside beverage?
Okay, so I know that usually this is like a little boozy, that kind of thing, but unfortunately I am an actual child. My first birthday is not until July, so I'm rocking some Starbucks today, chai tea latte. So yeah.
Okay.
Good. Yeah.
Is that your typical go-to Starbucks drink?
Actually, yes, it is. That or at Christmas time, that peppermint mocha. I know it's basic, but it's so good. Like, it just makes me so happy every time. So yeah.
I have a hate relationship with basic things, because I love them so much that something that's basic is basic because people love it. So like the mocha peppermint latte is good, so it becomes basic. I hate that, but
you're like the pumpkin spice latte is like everybody likes it because it's good. Don't judge me. Oh yeah. Yeah, don't hate a thing. Hate a thing because you think you're cool. Like, yeah,
right. Damn tribalism. I am sitting here with a nice tall glass of Bullet Bourbon, one of my classics, one of my go-tos. I was actually picking between that and a Goose Island IPA, so I want the bourbon tonight as a classic choice.
Rock on.
Cool. So I'd like to kick things off with you just kind of introducing yourself, who you are, where you're from, and then we'll kind of dig into your background is how you got involved with the outdoors.
Heck yeah. So again, my name is Anna Lee. I am a filmmaker and photographer, and as already mentioned, I'm a professional whitewater raft guide formerly for the U.S. National Whitewater Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm actually planning this season to move up to West Virginia and guide for Ace Adventure on the New River Gorge and the Gali River, which is just going to be so good. I'm so stoked.
Those are some real true American classics right there.
Oh yeah, man. I love the New River Gorge so much. It's such a beautiful place. Like I'm so excited to be there. But yeah, originally I'm from Belmont, North Carolina, which is on the west side of Charlotte. So like 2 minutes from the Whitewater Center. So I basically grew up there. Right now, I'm actually in Wilmington, North Carolina. I am a junior at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. I'm a film studies major, which is a lot of fun. So I kind of like, I feel like I live like two lives almost, because I have my river life back in Charlotte or, you know, up in West Virginia. And then here I'm like a total like beach bum kind of person. Like I surf all the time, all that kind of thing. Yeah.
That's a good mixture. But before we go any further, I'm kind of a movie guy myself, so I have to ask, as a film person, do you have like an all-time favorite movie, or is that too tough of a question?
So my answer, people usually look at me like I absolutely have lost my mind whenever I say this. My favorite movie, and the reason I actually went to film school, was Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Dude, it's so good. It's such
epic.
A good movie. Yes. But I actually, so when I was in high school, I was bored out of my mind one summer day, and I ended up like just going through YouTube. I found this documentary series that was all about how they made Lord of the Rings. And I mean, mm-hmm. this bad boy was like 8 hours long, like going way too into detail. I watched every minute twice. It was so good. And just from there, like I was, just out of pure coincidence, I was signed up for 3 different film classes that following semester and just fell in love. And from there, I got into a whole bunch of filmmaking stuff. I was also already into photography, so it really just combined a whole bunch of things that I liked. Yeah.
That's super cool. It's cool when your passions combine like that, too. Do you bring that into your time out on the water? Do you record video? And
Oh, yeah. I don't record as much video as I would like to, but like on my Instagram, that kind of thing, I talk about like taking photos of your friends as a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I am always, if I'm not, you know, out on the water with a paddle in my hand, I'm most of the time on the riverbank taking photos, like getting way too stoked, telling people like, yo, like surf this hole. Like you'll probably flip the boat, but it's going to be fine. It's going to be so good.
Yeah. Do it for the footy. You got to do it for the footy.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Just do it for the gram, man. Just do it for
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think I've gotten myself in trouble a couple of times with that catchphrase. So you like grew up pretty much like right outside of the Whitewater Center. Did you go as a kid? Like what brought you, you said it was like a professional goal of yours to get in there and become one of the guides. From my childhood on to the point where you became a guide, what's that journey look like for you?
So the Whitewater Center actually opened when I was, it was like 2003, 2004. So I was like 3 or 4 years old. So it's always just been there. And then when I was a kid, I had a really good friend of mine named Anna Claire. And my parents and her parents teamed up. And they're like, they should go out and do a summer camp. So they ended up sending us to the Whitewater Center when we were like way too young to be going there. We were like 10 years old. And there's a picture of me, one of our bigger rapids on the Wilderness Channel, where we only have class 2s and 3s. Our biggest rapid over there is called M Wave. And there's a picture of me 10 years old, way too like excited to be alive, about to get thrashed by this wave, doing a get down. And Anna Claire is behind me, like hiding into her yeah, he's screaming, and I'm like just stoked, like it's gonna hurt but it's gonna be rad going into it. So that's my first memory of actually whitewater rafting, and from there I never really got like bitten by the bug of whitewater rafting until I did guide school when I was 18. So from like growing up at the Whitewater Center, I did those summer camps for 3-4 years with Anna Claire every summer. And then I would just, whitewater rafting was something that I did as like a cool thing on a trip. So when I was 16, I did this program called Teens Westward Bound, where myself and 80 strangers got on a bus and we went to California and back. And we rafted on the Snake River in Wyoming. I went to Alaska when I was 17 and I rafted on the Denali River in Denali National Park. So those were like my exposure, like my experiences with whitewater. And then just one day I decided, bored in my dorm room, like, yeah, I can totally be a raft guide. Absolutely. Right. I'll sign up for guide school today. Yeah.
I think it's such a magical moment because I think I'll give you my experience. So when I was signing up for my first year as a whitewater guide, I was 21 years old and I was coming out of college and I was like, you know what? None of these job applications are going anywhere. I don't want to wear freaking suits. I don't want to do any of these things, you know, that the real world is going to force you into. My dad's like, hey, check this out. Maybe you could do this for a summer as you figure out the rest of your life. And I was like, oh, hell. It was like a hell yeah moment. Like, why didn't I think of this myself? I could, you know, live out of my tent, be on the water every day, work on my tan, like entertain people, be in big water. And I was fired up to the point where I was like, I'm going to buy all my gear before I know anything. So I bought like a Wave Runner PFD, like the worst knife humanly possible. I mean, all my gear was wrong. And then I got there and like, even though my expectations were totally different than what it turned into, it was even better than I could have expected after the growing pain. So I was wondering if that was kind of the same thing that you experienced. Like you got there and you had like this grand ideal of what it was going to look like. And then you kind of got tossed into this guide school, which is pretty rigorous. What was your experience going from like the expectation of being a professional guide to like being in the middle of guide school?
So my expectation, when I first had the idea to be a whitewater raft guide, I was, social media is like a theme of my life almost. Mm-hmm. I was scrolling through Instagram and I saw this picture of this kid jumping into the class four. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, I want to do that. So that's really where I was like, you know, maybe I could do that. Like, that doesn't scare me. That excites me. And then after I signed up for guide school, I signed up in February and I believe my guide school was in like March, April, that kind of that time zone. So I had a lot of buildup leading up to it. And the longer it took for guide school to actually start, the more nervous I got, because like I mentioned it in my articles with the International Rafting Federation, I am 5'2" and I'm a girl, in a testosterone saturated industry. So the longer I had to think about it, the more nervous I got, because, you know, I'm short. I'm in shape, but really mostly I run. So my upper body, laughable at that time, just absolutely laughable. So I really got nervous because I didn't feel like there was a place for me. And the way that I tried to like make myself feel better, that kind of thing, is I went to the internet and I searched for articles kind of like the one that I wrote, looking for advice, and I couldn't find any advice for like females specifically. I could find a lot of advice like for general stuff, but not for female guides. And so that kind of thing just made me even more nervous. And then once guide school started, I was still really nervous and I was kind of in my own head. Rafting made me grow up a lot, especially that first summer. So all through guide school, I was really nervous. I was a little quiet, but I was so excited to be there. And I was so determined I was going to get it. Like every night. So like I said before, I was only 2 minutes from the center. So I was staying at my parents' house and then going to guide school. And then Monday mornings, I would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to drive back to Wilmington to get film class. But like I would stay up super late after eight, 10 hours straight on the water, be like, Dad, like, I don't know how to tie these knots. Like, you have to show me right now. And we'd be practicing them, that kind of thing. So I guess my expectation, it wasn't as scary as I thought it would be, but it was a hell of a lot harder than I ever could have anticipated. It doesn't come easy. It takes a lot of discipline and it takes a lot of humbling moments. I had a lot of really spectacular failures during guide school and throughout, you know, the checkout process, and still now where I'm like, wow, like that was really dumb and I looked dumb, but I learned a lot doing all of those types of things. Yeah.
For somebody who may be unfamiliar with what guide school is, what would be like the nutshell version? How would you explain it to somebody?
So guide school, most outfitters do this, where if you're interested in working at like a specific river or just for like in a specific region, they offer a guide school, which can be, so for the Whitewater Center, it's a week. For Ace Adventure, it's going to be 3 weeks, where they're going to basically give you a crash course into everything rafting. They're going to teach you your guide strokes, which are just funky stuff called draws and pries and J strokes, that kind of thing. Where they're just like, they feel like funky forward and back strokes, but they're not, they're really important, that kind of thing.
that's a great description.
Exactly, yeah. they're going to feel redundant, but they're really useful, I swear. Or like teach you how to sit in the back of the boat correctly, because there's an art to it. And I totally didn't know it my first season and fell out all the time. Yeah. Just that kind of thing. And once you have those core skills down, they're also going to teach you how to read the water, so you know where to try and send the boat if the boat actually decides to listen to you. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. It's just a crash course about how to get your boat down the river safely, and they're going to keep making you do it, and you're going to get really tired and really frustrated, but you're going to have a really good time doing it.
Yes, yeah. That's a great description. Do you remember what was the most difficult thing for you to get through during your first guide school?
Oh, it's the flip drill. So the flip drill, for those who don't know, you have to get on the side of the boat, flip it upside down, climb on, flip it right side up, and then climb on again. And for the Whitewater Center, so the Whitewater Center has an unnatural river, and it is powered by 6 hydraulic pumps. And for guide school and for your second checkout, what you have to do is you have to take one of our big 8-man rafts, you have to J-stroke it, which is like a funky forward stroke by yourself, and you have to paddle it out in front of those 6 hydraulic pumps, which all 6 of, or with those 6 on, we can fill up an Olympic-sized swimming pool in something like a minute and 12 seconds. Like,
it's a good amount of water.
Yeah, it is going at you. And so you're trying to fight the current and not get sucked down our 2 channels, the Wilderness Channel and the Competition Channel. And you have to flip it and flip it right side up, all in 3 minutes and 30 seconds. Wow. And the key to the flip drill that is makes it so much easier is being tall and having upper body strength, which
wait a minute. I'm starting to see a theme here of 2 things that you said you might be lacking.
A pattern of a problem. Yeah. So it was so hard to try and figure it out. And my problem, you know, I was talking to tall people for advice, and I'm like, wait a minute, there's a problem here. So actually, there's this really awesome raft guide that still works for the center. His name is Jeff Wilbur. And he's only an inch taller than me, and I swear he's skinnier than I am. And he taught me how to do my flip drill and kind of connected it to Pilates, of all things, where you have to like raise your belly button to the sky. You're like literally almost underneath the tube when you're sideways on it, trying to flip it upside down. But eventually I got it. It took a while, and there may have been tears at some point, but I did it.
Yes.
I'm proud of it.
Yes. The crucible of whitewater is always a challenge. That is for sure. Some good life lessons to be learned.
Taught me a lot of patience.
Yeah. Hey campers, I've got a pretty cool opportunity I wanted to tell you about real quick. Wildman Adventure Resort, the amazing multi-sport outdoor recreation paradise that I started my own guiding career at, is hiring for the 2021 season. If you've ever been interested in possibly becoming a guide, or you're a guide looking for an opportunity to get in with the largest whitewater outfitter in the Midwest, here is your shot. To apply, check out wildmanresort.com/jobs. That's wildmanresort.com/JOBS. And when you fill out that application, make sure to mention that you heard about this from the Camping Out podcast. Tell them Dan sent you. You have been able to take your experience and the things that you've learned, and I've read your writing and now talking to you, like just putting all these pieces together, which is really wonderful. But you've been able to take your experience and the things that you've learned both from the river and from the people that you've been around, and put them into a couple different articles that have been circulated on pretty much like the main rafting group that's out there. And that's pretty freaking cool, honestly.
Thank you.
What 2 pieces have you put together? And are you like happier with one or the other? I know sometimes as a creative mind, you're your biggest critic.
So I've written 2 articles for the International Rafting People. I'm actually about to do a 3rd. We'll talk about that in a sec. But my first article that I wrote for them is originally, it was called Wild Whitewater Woman. And as a little background to that title, there's this really hilarious song called Whitewater Woman from this whole album of river songs where the guy is so genuine the whole time. And he talks about kayaking and canoeing and rafting. And like literally the opening lines of this song is "Wild Whitewater Woman, for you'd I'd intrude on the Green River Narrows to paddle with you." It's so good. It's so funny. But they changed it up to being 5 steps to becoming a wild whitewater woman.
Damn search engine optimization. Always right? Gotta get, right?
Yeah. I emailed my editor, Sean. I was like, dude, it was so like clean, you know? And he's like, no, we had to like lengthen it a little bit, that kind of thing. But in that article, it's pretty self-explanatory from the title. I give you 5 pieces of advice from my personal experience as a raft guide of how to start out and how to make yourself feel more comfortable in your first season. Because of, in my experience, the hardest thing that first year guides struggle with is having a little bit of imposter syndrome where they don't really feel like they belong. So they get in their own head and they make themselves work. They make themselves worse. So it's really just trying to tell you, calm down. You got this. You've earned your place. Now just get in the back of the boat and do it. That kind of thing.
Your 5 points were so good. And I wrote them down because I wanted to share them with everybody that's listening because they were so, so good. So number one is stop taking yourself so seriously. What a great, I mean, life lesson, but in rafting, yeah, the moment that you start to think too much about yourself, that's already a dangerous path. So what a great point. Number 2 is create your wild whitewater woman costume. I want to talk about that one specifically. So like, what do you mean by that?
So my personal philosophy, if you're gonna do it freaking loud, man. So all of my gear is obnoxious colors. My helmet is bright blue. It has sparkles on it. And on the back, it's actually, it's from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It says, "Don't panic" on the back, which always makes people ask questions or just look absolutely terrified. Like, I don't make people feel comfortable when they first meet me. But that kind of thing of like the "Don't Panic" sticker has almost become a little bit of like my brand on the river where people will recognize and just some people call me "Don't Panic." Like one time we had Dane Jackson come to the center and he recognizes me from that sticker and thinks it's the funniest thing ever. I saw him when I was up rafting at the Gali during Gali season this past year, and he recognized me and I almost cried. I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, like he knows who I am. That's so cool. Yeah. But besides my helmet of just like having that weird, bizarre thing that's like a talking point that's kind of funny, but also a little bit sadistic. It's finding something else that makes you feel confident and almost a little bit like hater blinders. So that can be an anklet, a bracelet, a funky shirt. For me, it's really funky sunglasses. I have a problem. I'll buy sunglasses anywhere I go. I like literally, dude, I have a hot pink pair. I have some triangles. I have Ozzy Osbourne glasses of any color of the rainbow, just any type of funky sunglass that like just makes people stop and be like, she's got either she's not firing on all cylinders or she's going to be a good time. And we're gonna remember it, that kind of thing. Yeah. Just find something that makes you feel comfortable and confident. Yeah.
It's like a superhuman persona almost. You have an opportunity to like reinvent yourself and have as much swagger as you want to have. I love
that. You're not the same person on the water as you are just like walking around on land in normal clothes, you know? Right. So if you are allowed to make yourself into a caricature, then really do it and just go for it. Yeah.
Excellent.
Do it loud.
I love it. I'm going to get a t-shirt with that on there. Number 3, let the comments roll. And I'm assuming that is more of like, people are going to say what they want to say. And I feel like, especially as a chick guide, you probably get this more like a tiny 5'2" woman is going to get that more than like a 6'2" guy as you're even just getting your crew. So, what's your best advice for letting the comments roll?
So, like I say in the article, sexism exists in this industry, but where you're really going to run into the most problems is from your guests, especially from like the super dads who come up and be like, I can guide this boat by myself. I don't need training, that kind of thing. And they may not even say anything. They may just look at you and you can just feel that the vibe is off, that kind of thing.
Right.
And my biggest advice for you when something like that happens is don't even acknowledge it, because as soon as you acknowledge it, they're going to feel like you've given them power. So just recognize that it's there, own it, and say, okay, I'm going to give you the best trip I can give you, and I'm going to prove you wrong. Something that really like fuels me is when people don't believe in me. I want to prove you wrong so bad. So whenever I feel that kind of energy, I'm like, okay, like it's going to be completely awesome. Your 8-year-old kids are going to think I hung the moon, and just really commit to giving them a good trip. Don't let it stop you and just make you give up. That kind
Number four, you said establish your credibility, and that's all based around being consistent and doing your thing on the daily. What else would you add to establishing your credibility?
So that one's kind of an extension of letting the comments roll. So when you have people who aren't necessarily trusting you off of first glance, give them something to make them believe in you. So for me, I don't know how sometimes, but I can pull in people 2 times my size, 3 times my size, like one arm while also still calling strokes, that kind of thing. So just finding that skill of pulling people into the boat, pulling yourself into the boat, turning your boat with one draw stroke, if you can do that, good for you. Just finding something that's almost a spectacle of physicality to be like, look, like I can really do this, I swear, that kind of thing.
Yes. And then finally, I love this one. And I think this is another one of those that transcends the river, which is find a mentor and be a mentor. So that's taken 2 steps there. It's accepting that you got to find somebody that you look up to and who is doing it the way that you want to do it. And you have to ask that person for help, or they have to extend the olive branch to you, which can be intimidating. And then the second half of that is actually taking what you've learned and been taught and then teaching somebody else, which is another way to even further your skills. So do you have somebody that mentored you when you were starting?
So when I first started out, my first mentor was actually, it was a fellow female guide. She passed my first checkout. Her name is Katie. She actually works over at the Chattooga and the Tallulah now. But she was just, she was the raft guide that I wanted to be. She really just did not care what people thought. She was, I'm a loud kind of corny raft guide. There's going to be other people who are a little bit more quiet and reserved. It's all just kind of up to how you feel. But she was just so laissez-faire about life and just, you know, whatever happens, happens. And we're here to just react and have a good time. And you know what? Nobody's going to know you messed up if you just laugh hysterically and say, ha, nailed it. Here we go. Right. She helped me out a lot. Something that really impacted me. I was so nervous during my checkout run with her. And then after, so we do 4 laps during our trips at the center. And we'll do 2 laps over on the wilderness side, which are those class 2s and 3s. And then over on the competition sides is class 3s and class 4s. And after my first lap over on Wilderness Channel, she looks over at me and just hits, and just says, hey, you're doing a great job. And that was the first time somebody had said that to me, like in a checkout run or just during guide school, anything like that. And it just, it made me feel like I was in control and like this was my trip to run, not her trip that she's babysitting me on. And it really just, it left an impact on me for sure. And so she helped me a lot my first season. Absolutely. Made me feel comfortable and confident. Yeah.
And so being shown that kind of love, have you had the opportunity to give that back to somebody?
Yes. So this is going to be my 3rd season this coming year. Last season I had the opportunity to be a trip leader, which gave me even more like street cred to actually be mentors. But there was a lot of first years that I found kept like coming back to me because they felt comfortable opening up because I didn't want to judge them. Cause you know, I struggled a lot with checking out, initially because of that damn flip drill. It's the bane of my existence. But I had them coming to talk to me or asking me about the paddle talks because, so the paddle talks, like that initial safety talk in the beginning of your trip, for those who aren't as interacting. And just asking me, okay, well, like, give me corny jokes, that kind of thing. I've just, they felt safe to come and talk to me and felt confident afterwards, which was really humbling. And I really, like, I don't take that for granted. I really like that. Yeah.
What do you think one of the, I guess, core tenets of being a mentor or a leader to people who are coming to you for help is for someone who's looking to maybe get in that trip leader role or maybe just take on more leadership in their life?
So as a leader and you want people to come to you, the first step to being a good leader is being open and being honest. So like I've already said about the flip drill, I struggled with that. Or sometimes, my first season, I would struggle with my lines over in competition channel, that kind of thing. Be open to saying your own faults. And that'll make people feel more comfortable to come up to you and be like, hey, I know you struggle with this, but you don't look like you struggle with this. Let's talk about it. Just being open about yourself. Don't make yourself look like this godlike figure from Valhalla or something. Mm-hmm. Just be a real person and people will come to you and be real people to you as well. Yeah.
Great. Now, your second article is a little bit different of a direction. It's kind of all about, it's minding our edges, right? So taking on these different things that you learn, and then like every good season in the world, seasons end, and you have to figure out what to do in those off seasons. And I thought this was a really, really great piece as well. So I'd love to hear you talk about it.
So this one, actually, they asked me to write this article right after the first one was published. And I reached out. So the guy that like edits all my stuff, his name is Sean. I reached out to him and said, hey, I think I'm going to take this in a different direction. The first one was a little bit campy. I love it. And it really fills a gap in like my heart that I wanted to fill since I like signed up for guide school, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But for this one, I really wanted to be a little bit more philosophical, a little bit older, that kind of thing. Excuse me. So with this one, I wanted to talk about how all adventure sports are connected, right? Mm-hmm. So outside of rafting, I'm a long distance runner. I'm training for my third half marathon. I'm a climbing instructor with my university. I scuba dive all the time. I surf, like I've mentioned before, just all of that kind of stuff. But the main core concepts of all of them that you need to be successful is patience and perseverance. You have to be patient with your skills and patient with your profession, and you have to persevere. You're going to embarrass yourself. You're probably going to embarrass yourself a lot trying to get started, and you have to be open to embarrass yourself, because if you're not, then you're never really going to progress, because you're always going to be in your own head. And you also have to persevere through the pain, the blood, the sweat, the tears, order to get through that, to get to where you want to be. And that, where I first learned those lessons, I didn't understand I was learning those lessons, was through rafting. And it was, the river is a very hard and unforgiving teacher. And through learning all of that stuff from the river, it really has helped me and all the other like facets of my life outside of adventure sports as well, with my school, with film studies and all that kind of stuff, or with my jobs. I work usually about 4 jobs at a time. So like I work for a film festival here in Wilmington called Kukuloris. I'm a graphic designer for an architecture firm. With all of them, you have to be patient with people giving you grades or giving you feedback, and you have to persevere through the long process so that you get to that end goal or that finish line, whatever it may be. Yeah.
It was really cool to read both articles and see it was a transition of sorts. It was almost like you took these lessons that you talked about in your first article and you had actually like meditated on them and sat on them and came out with those. I wrote down 2 words. You can probably guess what the 2 words I wrote down as I took notes for that article were: patience, perseverance. Yep. And like you did such a good job of taking those themes and putting them together. And I guess my question to you is, outside of those two, do you have like another favorite lesson that you've learned from not, it doesn't have to be the river, but being out in nature and being immersed in outdoor recreation sports?
I think outside of patience and perseverance, the other thing is respect. you're not going to get far in the outdoor industry or any industry, to come to think of it, without respect towards the source. So you have to, if you want to work in the outdoors, since, you know, that's what we're talking about with this conversation, you have to first respect the earth, where it came from and where it's going and where it's at now, your impact on what you're doing to it, and understand that at the end of the day, Mother Earth is always going to win. You know, she's always going to be able to throw you out of that boat and give you some discipline in a rapid, or, you know, like, you're going to fall off the wall because you didn't have enough respect to understand that you're not ready for this line, that kind of thing. So outside of patience and perseverance, definitely have a healthy dose of respect for what you're doing, because without respect, you're going to fail, most likely.
Very good answer. I love that. I want to take before we get to the end of these questions I have for you, I wanted to touch on your creative outlets. And like you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, you're much more than just a whitewater rafting guide. You're a filmmaker, photographer. You have, you're a writer. You have all these other things that you have in your life next to your outdoor recreation, your love of outdoor recreation. So I wanted to ask if your experiences in the outdoors has shifted how you view your art forms that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. My experience within the outdoor industry almost informs my creative outlets. So, like, obviously with my writing, I focus on outdoor industry topics. And then also with my photography and my filmmaking, my documentaries are usually outdoor based. And then with my photography, I always go out with the goal of, I either want to do something like a really badass landscape or a badass like wildlife kind of thing, or I want to do adventure portraiture. And what I'm trying to do in those three different types of shots is show people what they're missing if they don't go outside, or if they don't save what little bits of outside that they do care about, and just give them an outlet to where they can put themselves there. They can put themselves in that scenario.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Now, let's say you have all the resources in the world to pursue your dreams and your goals. What does the future look like for you given that circumstance?
Ooh, so if I had all the resources, let's see. So what I found to be what I'm most passionate about, to go back to that first article I wrote about of find a mentor and be a mentor, I never want, you know, male or female, I never want another person to feel as if they don't belong in the outdoor industry, or just in the outdoors in and of itself. Like, you don't have to work in it professionally. Like, you can just go outside and take a hike, and damn right, like, you earned your place there. Mm-hmm. So with that, I never want people to feel as if they don't belong. So I always want my work to make it feel accessible. So I guess if I had all the resources, I would continue on this kind of crazy path that I found myself with, working with the IRF, or just like working with you, or with River Company, that kind of thing, of just continuing to put out a good vibe of, yeah, you belong, and yeah, you've earned your spot, and here's proof. Here's, you know, a photo, or here is a documentary showing you that it's accessible and that it's possible. Yeah.
Killer, killer. Now, you mentioned that you have a third article for the IRF that's coming out. Do you want to talk about it?
Absolutely. So I am partnering up with the IRF and then also with Northwest Drafting in Oregon. And they are doing a raft guide and trip lead workshop in April. So they are flying me out there. I'm going to do that workshop with them, get some certifications, and photograph the workshop. And then I'm going to write about my experience when I come back. Wow. So look out for that. It's going to be good. I'm excited.
Yes, that is so awesome. I cannot wait to see that.
Out about it. Like, I'm so stoked. It's going to be so good.
Have you ever been in the Pacific Northwest?
I have not. I've been to California, but I've never been all the way up to like Oregon, Washington, that kind of thing. Oh, so excited. It's going to be so pretty.
I am jealous. That is so cool. As soon as that comes out, I will share it everywhere with the world because I think that's going to be really, really magical.
It. Heck yeah.
All right. You ready for these final five questions?
Let's do it, man. Rock and roll.
Number one's easy. Where can we find you on social media? Where can we interact with you after the podcast? And is there anything else that you're doing or something cool that you've seen or experienced that you want to bring some awareness to?
So I am most active on Instagram. You can find me there at Annalie Decker. I'm not one of those like funky people who try and make it funny, that kind of thing. So yeah, I'm pretty basic. So just find me at Annalie Decker. I'm also on Facebook. You can find me at Annalie Decker Photography. You gotta add that part in. I have a website as well where you can check out more of my work that's not quite Instagrammable, but I think it's pretty cool. Also, my films and then my articles are housed there as well for easy access. You can find that link on my Instagram or on my Facebook, but it's anneliedecker.myportfolio.com. And then actually I do have something I would like to share. So I have lately been reading this book that my editor from IRF sent me. It's called The Emerald Mile, and it's all about the fastest ride through the Grand Canyon on a dory, which is just crazy to me. And it also goes a lot into the history of whitewater rafting on the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon, as well as with some other rivers, some little tidbits like that. So if you're interested in learning about history of rafting and also just like some crazy dirtbags doing crazy dirtbag things, check it out. It's really good. The Emerald Mile by Kevin Fidarco.
Yeah. Awesome. I want to tag that as well as everything else you just talked about in the show notes. So anybody that's listening, if you want to continue to follow along, follow on social media and support the work that she's doing, check it out there. Awesome. Question number two, are you ready?
Yes.
This is tough. What is your favorite outdoor activity and why?
Oh God, man, I don't know. No, for sure. My favorite, I'm kind of basic. My favorite's whitewater rafting. And the reason for that is, I love to raft with my friends, but I also really love to take first time rafters on a trip. Mm-hmm. Especially, when the river decides for it to go well, just like the sheer like wonder and joy in their faces when the trip ends. And then like they get bitten by the whitewater bug and they get really into it. And they take up kayaking or SUP or they take a shot of whiskey and try out riverboarding, that kind of thing. And you're going to live in their minds as the person who introduced them to this world. And I think that's really cool. And I think it's really humbling. So yeah, mm-hmm. rafting.
Mm-hmm. Question number three, where's the favorite place that you've ever been to outdoors?
Ooh, outdoors. Okay. This is a hard question. I think my favorite place I've ever been outdoors, I was with my dad in Denali National Park, and we were rafting the Nanana River, and we just went through this Class 4, and if you look to your left, you could see Denali, and then if you look to your right, there was this huge bridge that underneath was a top rope climbing wall. Mm-hmm. And people were climbing up, and it was like, it was a big wall. It was like 100 feet tall, and people were just climbing up it, not even caring, like dreads down to like the middle of their backs, just like living their best life. And I just like, it really sent home to me that that's the kind of places that I like to be. I really felt like myself and like one with the world in a way. So yeah, right there at the Nanana.
Great answer. Number four, what is something that you see today as a blessing that in the moment you might've saw as a mistake?
Ooh. Okay. So when I was going through guide school, I was learning how to navigate through the Class 4. And to get through the Class 4, the Whitewater Center, it's called Big Drop. You first have to go around this really tight corner called Carnage Corner. And if you mess
Carnage
it up,
Corner.
Carnage Corner. Yeah. Oh, wow. You got to weave through Pillow Rock and then this boulder called Dwayne the Rock Johnson. And Dwayne hurts. But if you mess up Carnage Corner, you're going to get caught in a whole bunch of eddies. And the one you don't want to get caught up in is called Interrogation Room. And that's the one I got caught in my first run on competition. And my boat was backwards to where my back was facing the Class 4 rapid. And to get out of it, I was doing that pry I mentioned earlier, which is kind of like a funky backstroke. And right when I did my pry, the eddy flushed out. So my body followed that backwards momentum. And I backflipped out of the raft, bounced on some rocks, bounced down a concrete wall, and face planted into the Class 4. And had to swim out of it. And it was horrifying. I came out of the water a little bit dazed. And it seemed like the biggest mistake I could ever make. But what it taught me, it was my first really big lesson of that patience and perseverance from minding your edges, as well as I couldn't force my way down the river. I had to respect the river and respect how the water works and how it's actually going to allow the boat to get back into the current. And then I'll be successful. So that was really my first experience of learning all of these things that I now write about.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's awesome. Before question number 5, I just want to take a second, Annalie, and just acknowledge you for what you're doing. I think it's very important that people in the whitewater industry, especially, take their love and pass it on to somebody else. And I think through your writing and through your personal interactions every day and the way that you're bringing like your raft guide persona to your love of the sport and your love of these outdoor places is really inspiring. And I think it's going to encourage more and more people as you continue to spread that that love and that knowledge out. I think it's going to encourage a lot more people to get involved with whitewater rafting. So I think that's awesome.
Thank you. Heck yeah.
You're very welcome. All right. Question number 5, when it's all said and done, when you are gone and all we have left to talk about is your legacy around the campfire, friends and family, what do you hope that we are saying about you?
Ooh. I hope that people are saying that, I was way too stoked to be alive. I think, being excited about life is way more fun and way more entertaining to be around, you know? And I also hope they say I'm kind. A really big thing about like me being a leader or me being a mentor is I always want to come at it from a angle of kindness, you know? Because in my experience, you're not going to get really far if somebody tells you that you suck or that like you're never going to get this. Be like, okay, so that wasn't your best performance. Let's spin it around and let's figure out what's going on that is getting in your way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I hope that people think that I'm stoked and that I'm kind.
Yeah. Annalie Decker, great answer. Thank you so much for being on Camping Out. Enjoy the rest of your evening. And I cannot wait to keep in touch with you and see where you go next.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to keep talking to you. Heck yeah.
Yes. All right. Have a good night.
You too. See ya. Bye.
And that is that for this episode of Camping Out. I was so energized by Annalie's stoke for life. Annalie's river wisdom and sunny disposition are a powerful combination to help continue to grow the river community. River guides are such an eclectic group of people. Some are loud, some are wild, some have stories that will captivate you from eddy to eddy. But within every river guide, there is a big heart and a love for those special wild places that fill up their souls. Head on over to the show notes to interact with Annalie Decker or myself post-podcast. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please share it with a friend or a family member, as well as give us that 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. That's the best way to continue to grow our campfire community, sharing and rating. I challenge you to get outside for at least 20 minutes today. And remember, adventure comes to those who go.